Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Ricardo on the board after a tough drive in. It's raining here. There's all kinds of stuff happening on the expressways. And was that a passenger or a freight train you got stuck in front of?
That was a freight train. I don't know what a freight train is, but it's one of those that are like cargo, and it takes like 7 minutes to go by.
That's a freight train.
Uh-huh.
Freight versus passenger.
It was horrible, man.
There you go. SP Futures up 24, and NASDAQ Futures up 144. Now, we finished actually down a little yesterday in the S&P and the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ was up huge all day. It was up 210 points. All of a sudden came flying down in the afternoon to negative with kind of no news. And all of a sudden we're up three quarters of that again. So we'll see if we hang in there today. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Morning.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. Friday, long weekend, kind of nice.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of crummy and humid today, but getting better to where Monday is like 75 and no humidity. So every day a little better, eh?
Every day is always a little better, Tom.
I guess that's the
draw. Always look on the bright side of life.
Wasn't that a song?
Yeah, Monty Python.
Yeah. Anywho, the yesterday I have been talking for a while, and I don't think, you know, it's unless you have a huge blackboard and blackboard showing my age, it's kind of hard to do the argument, Kevin, that over a long period of time in a efficient economy, just plain owners shouldn't do that much better than the lessees in terms of wealth accumulation over time. Now, you know, if you put stuff into place and sweat equity, that all gets added in. But I think the interview yesterday with Tommy Grisafi yesterday was really was spot on, wasn't it? He said, anybody in the farming area that owns something has done so well in the last 5 to 10 years, and people who are like just, you know, renting property and you know, growing corn are absolutely getting annihilated. I mean, it's just, that shouldn't be unless you have a government that's doing it on purpose.
Well, you know who has accumulated more farmland than anyone else over the last especially piling it up during the all the COVID nonsense.
It's not BlackRock, is it? Was it?
No, Gates.
Oh, okay. All right. That doesn't surprise me.
Bill Gates has been racking up the land, the farmland, and pushing plant-based meats, meat-like substance.
Yeah.
If you were conspiratorial, you might think that there was something intentional going on here.
Yeah, you sure would.
And it's pretty damned hard not to.
Well, I mean, it's hard to separate him out from the people who own stock, the people that own... The only people don't seem to be getting the part that goes over the fence last are the people that own commercial real estate. That's not working out at all for a lot of people, especially in some downtown areas. But, you know, you get some of this... I mean, the reason why I'm kind of harping on this, A, is because that's what I do. But B is the PCE number comes out today.
Bitch, yeah.
And of course, now here's a number that won't give you any detail on whatsoever, and yet everybody hangs by the Fed's every word. They could show you a picture of somebody's behind, and it would make any... You know, it's like they can tell you whatever they want, Kevin. There's no detail to the thing or anything like that. But just to give a little bit of a perception on some of how wild some of this is, is I was listening to News Radio 78 on my way home the other day, and I'll give them credit because they had the article or the piece that the golf thing that's going on now, is it's not still the BMW, it's the Tour Championship now, it used to be the BMW, whatever. It's the one where the guys all year qualify, and then you have, you know, what, 70 or 80 guys one week.
Kind of a playoff, yeah.
And they're going to get it down to whatever. The difference between first place, $25 million, and second place, $12.5 million, is three times the amount that Palmer and Nicholas made combined in their whole career. Now, that's a number.
It's a big number.
So, of course, it forces me to go back and do a little research. What do you suppose the 1980 Masters champion won?
Oh, let's see. A wild guess, about $3.5 million.
1980?
Oh, that would be this year.
Yeah.
Probably more like $60,000.
You're pretty close. 55 and 3.6.
I was listening yesterday.
Okay. That's six. Well, I did the math. 65 times more.
And now it's $3.5 million.
Yeah, it's 65 times higher. Yet if you punch in the dummy CPI, it should be four times higher. Isn't it something?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that that's the place to go, because there's also a dynamic when it comes to sports, where when we look at some of those salaries and we look at some of the earnings, there was a time, not, and it wasn't that far back in history, when the people who produced, who owned teams and all of that kind of, basically the people who were in charge, allegedly, were the ones who made all the money, and the athletes didn't make as much. So that's probably not the place I would go for, it's a comparison, but I don't know that it's a really, there's a lot of other factors in it, let me put it that way, that go into it. So for instance, if you look at baseball salaries, well, they were kind of indentured slaves at once upon a time. So yes, their salaries went up, and then they went up because of the way they negotiated the deal and made free agency scarcity. There's a lot that goes into that. But we can look at all kinds of other examples.
Well, I mean, you look at...
We don't have to zero in on sports to know that the cost structures of everything have changed in a very negative way.
Well, but sports, you're right. There's always something different about something. But sports is... part of the program. It's a big part of the program, but I'm going to say, let me see if I can get 1980 up here. I don't know if I can on this dead clock. They go back to how much people made. I'm going to say 1982 or 83, when I first got my Cub tickets. Well, Dan had them a year before me. Maybe 81 or 82. So say early 80s. Upper deck, first row, Wrigley Field, were, I think they were $3.50. Call it $5. Be nice. They've got to be 85 now. 75, somewhere in there.
Yeah, on the other hand, you get into a White Sox game for less than $5.
You have to cost you $30 to park.
Yeah, no kidding. It'll cost you another 30 for a hot dog and a beer.
But I mean, so we're talking how many times, and yet... if I can find it here, if I can get back to the time machine, if they have it on that time machine, 1980, I'm going to say the median income, if I can, the page here is not as good, is nowhere near going up that many times. So whatever it is, whatever you're looking at, assets per citizen, some money supply, I don't think they have that on this. All the way back to 1980 on this thing, but when you look at some of the stuff that is, I mean, a lot of people like baseball and those kinds of things, and the fact is, nothing that anybody's done, the people who have stock or have had property, maybe have kept pace if you had the right property, but if you're just a worker bee, You've been getting buried for 60 years now, 40 years. And I don't know how people put up with it, Kevin. I honestly don't. But to go ahead, my Sox game story. One of my buddies, another grumpy old Irish guy, he's had White Sox season tickets since 1981. And he doesn't have them anymore this year. So they call him. They keep calling him. Hey, how come you haven't sent your check in? So finally, he gets a guy on the phone, And the guy says, well, how come you don't want your tickets? He says, well, A, the team basically sucks, but that's not the real reason. He goes, I give these out to people. I don't want 81 games, somebody calling me from the gate saying the ticket didn't transfer and how do I get in? I don't want the bother. I want to give somebody the tickets and go out to dinner or do what I want to do. And I'd have to put up with this every single night. And he goes, plus, you know, I don't, every one of the people I give it to don't want to sign up for whatever it is, Major League Baseball, and give them a picture of their private parts. They don't want to do it. And he goes on another thing. When I go to the game, I usually buy 3-4 rounds of beer. I don't want 3-4 rounds of beer on my credit card. I want to be able to pay cash. I mean, I don't want this trail. This is, God, he's worse than me. He goes, and the guy says, well, that's just the way it is. Get a load of this. For a few years, evidently, the Sox gave you the ability to get tickets if you wanted. And he paid an extra $500 to get them printed. Now they tell him he can't even do that.
Can't do that anymore, no. Nope.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean, but it's not, I guess if anybody younger is listening, I think people are, would say, you know, what's with these old dudes? The fact is, we're the customer, Kevin, right?
We're the customer. Okay, so that's part one. We're the customer. And actually, you may be younger saying, what's with the old dudes, but who spends the money?
Yeah.
That's an older demographic. So that's part of the deal. I think you're right. Customers should be able to define the value of what's going on here, and that's exactly how it's supposed to work. You're also right about creating the trail. Do I really care if somebody knows that I got a couple of hot dogs and a couple of beers at the game? Not really, but we keep giving up our privacy. We voluntarily surrender it over and over again, and then and we are so far down that road, and you know, you get to a point where it's too late. You know, what are you going to do about it now? And the answer is, there's not much you can do about it to preserve your privacy. And you know, it's just incredible to me that we have coughed it up so easily and voluntarily.
Well, I can see something to the point where it's cheaper for us to do it this way, and somehow, you know, Major League Baseball, maybe they send our ads to you or something. Maybe they're paying you. I don't know how that works. You probably know more about that than me. It's one thing to say we're going to save $400 by not printing you out these tickets. I used to get them here in the office. I mean, it's a big, huge bulk of tickets. And by the way, if you want to pay the $400, you can. If you don't, here's the new method. That I can understand in a second. That's business. But the idea, oh no. By the way, we've determined that you should get 40 calls from people from the gate when they can't get in. You just have to suck it up. And he goes, I'm not sucking it up. See ya.
You know, before Notre Dame went all electronic, if I wanted to print my basketball ticket myself, I didn't have to have, you know, they didn't have to send me the ticket. They can send me the PDF, and I can print it myself, and they can scan the barcode off of that just as well as they can scan the barcode off of my phone.
But they don't want to do that.
But they don't want to do that either.
Well, I mean, I used to love...
And the delivery cost of that is near zero.
Well, for a long period of time, every game I went to, be it a bowl game or whatever, I never had a ticket. There's always somebody. I mean, how many years ago, I went to about four or five stadiums. I just drove and went from stadium to stadium. I just hung outside. Somebody always, there's four people in the group, and somebody couldn't make it. Hell, I sat next to doctors. I sat next to lawyers. And I not only enjoyed the game, I enjoyed the people I bought the ticket from. I'm not gonna, how do you even do that now? I mean, I don't want to give, if I were to have an extra ticket, I'm going to eat the thing. I'm not going to give some guy my phone number and everything else. Why would I?
No, I mean, a transfer is pretty easy. They have to give you their phone number. You don't have to give them yours. But it's pretty easy, except that sometimes they shut that down right before game time. And you're right. I'm not going to go outside the stadium. And some guy's looking for, you know, like you used to be able to go and say someone's looking for a pair of tickets or looking for one ticket. and okay, let's stop, let's take 5 minutes, let's get the ticket transfer done, good, successful transfer. And that's a big part of the intent, is they wanted to get rid of that part of the aftermarket. Instead, the market now goes to it gets laid off to a ticket brokerage firm, and the source, whether it's the Cubs or whether it's a college, it doesn't matter. They all get a piece of the action on that. So now, if I'm going to do a ticket transfer, and I have to do it through Ticketmaster or somebody like that, then you know the issuer is going to get a piece of the, even if it's a scalp, they're going to get a piece of the action. So that's what's behind it.
So you have to give them a, I think the last year Larry had his Sox tickets, every time he transferred them, it was like 5 or 8% to somebody?
Well, if I do a ticket transfer from my Notre Dame account, it's nothing. So if you're coming over for a basketball game and I say, I'll meet you inside, I do the ticket transfer, that costs me nothing. But if I'm going to put my ticket up for sale because I know I'm not going to use it, and it goes on to SeatGeek, then SeatGeek is going to get a piece of the transaction. And if it's like the officially sanctioned aftermarket, then it's going to get there. So I'll give you an example of how this tends to work, though. There's also a second part of this where you will see, I have seen this, a basketball game, it has plenty of seats a day or two before the game, and then all of a sudden they say it's a sellout, and what you do then is you go on to their secondary market. You know, there's Vivid Seats, there's SeatGeek, there's whatever, but there's always one that's an affiliation, and Notre Dame will have a link on its website, and that link will take you there. So all they did to get a sellout was they dumped all those tickets into the secondary market and said, okay, we're done dealing with it for the last day or two before the game. It's usually like the one day before the game, and you have to go there to get your ticket. They're going to get a piece of that, because what they're doing is they're selling, say I have $20 tickets, they're selling them to SeatGeek for half of that, and okay, SeatGeek's not going to sell them all, but they're going to sell enough of them to recover their cost and make some money. So that's how that game works.
Well,
did I explain that well enough to make sense?
Yeah, it's somewhat complicated, but because I know is even the Sox as bad as they are this year. I think what's happened, another thing, criticism of the way they're doing it, Kevin, just for laughs a couple days, because my guys will say, geez, you can get into Sox Park for X. I go to the Sox site, and it'll say tickets available. And, you know, you can put on there that you're selling them for less than whatever. Actually, the first couple years that Larry was able to do that through the Sox, you couldn't sell them for less than face. So I don't know how that all worked out. But if you go on there right now, they'll show a whole section, and at the game there's five people sitting there. They'll show you that there's five seats available. So maybe people are just eating them and not going through the system.
Well, it could be. Hey, they have Frank Thomas bobblehead day this weekend. with tickets as cheap as they are, how many people do you suppose are going to buy a ticket just to go up, walk in the door, get their Frank Thomas bobblehead, and turn around and go home?
God. Median family income, not individual. Median family income in 1980 was $21,000. So today, median family income is probably what, 60? Because individuals 39, let's say it's 65. So it's roughly three and a half times more. And all the stuff we're talking about is in the factor of 20, 30, 40 times more, right? No, it's
There's a lot of stuff that's way out of whack, I'm not arguing with you about that. It's just many of them have their special circumstance. Many of them are just plain, it's bleeped up.
Well, even sports. It comes from the revenue side. I mean, the part that's all about that is basketball. you know, the contract says that they're going to, they have to give the players, what, 48% or 40% somewhere in there of the
it's a big chunk of the revenue.
Which, you know, and they're getting so much from TV revenue and so forth, although then they're fighting over that. You know, and I think they're going to screw that up by having a bunch of different people having to go to Apple and all the other places that are bidding for it. Because I'm not going to buy that stuff. I mean, I'm sure they don't care about me. But anyway, you look at how this works out. Whenever something is not free, Kevin, when I'm saying it's not really free enterprise, it's when somebody says, what are you, a socialist? Well, first of all, everybody knows I'm not a socialist. You don't trade on a trading floor for 20 years and be a socialist. But I don't know what exactly this is, or these constant little monopolies all over the damn place. I mean, the idea that in order to have a baseball team, you have to once in a great while you get to pay all the other owners for the right of having a baseball team. Kevin, where the hell is that America? I mean, how does that? you know, if you and I want to put up a baseball team, we should be able to have one.
Yeah, you're paying to join the club. Well, you can have a baseball team if you want, but you can't have a Major League Baseball team.
And you can't
have one that is officially MLB.
Yeah.
You can't, but geez, Reinsdorf can.
Yeah, and you know, what is...
He's doing a lot for the game.
Well, I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to dribble too much on this because we got the PC number today and a bunch of other stuff. What is the story there? I mean, Kevin, it was the saddest experience the other night at the place. The people there look like, you know, they lost their son or something. I mean, everybody's got, I mean, they're pleasant as hell. I mean, up in the, you know, the elevators and stuff. But there's just nobody there. And you can just tell they know five people who used to work there that are sitting at home not making any money that night. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it must be like the Depression, for God's sake.
Well, this is what it's like if you work for a dying company. It is a total death march, it's very depressing.
But I don't see how. I mean, I'm not the guys that were with me. Marty's a big time Sox fan. You know, we have to get back in. Who's the dude that we used to have a couple times when Matty was here? The guy,
Josh Nelson.
Yeah, I wonder, is he committed Harry Carey or what?
I got a follow on Josh on social media. He's he is, needless to say, a little down on the White Sox.
Well, I mean, when you have in any kind of an organization that's halfway decent, if you strip away your top four or five players and, you know, the injury bug hit the Sox, now they should have, I guess, sort of anticipated it with Mancata and the left fielder, but it's hard to really anticipate that. And did McCann even play a day this year, or was he got hurt in spring training?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
But, I mean, it doesn't matter. It was very early. But at this point of the year, I mean, look what's happening to the Cubs. They've got two or three young players that are carrying them the last 3 weeks. I mean, you would think that even if you started your Triple-A team and you got your ass kicked, you know, April, May, June, somebody somewhere – if you drafted anywhere decent, one or two of those guys might be worth going out to see play. Where all of a sudden you're going to see a guy that his average is .220, but by the way, the last 2 months he's hitting .290 or .300 or something. They don't have anybody like that, do they?
They have some young guys that are up and they're in, but they're in over their head. It's just what they haven't had the opportunity to do is like what Amaya or Crow Armstrong have had the opportunity to do, which is just play through it, because they haven't been there long enough. So I don't know if they have guys that are worth seeing or not, but you know, when you bring them up with a third of the season left, they're going to spend that third of the season doing exactly what we saw Amaya do for the first half of the season.
Yeah, well, did the Cubs suggest that change in his batting, or did he figure it out?
I think they were working with him on it. It's just it's a hard thing to implement, and you know, and you've said this before. This is one of your favorite mantras. It may not make that big a difference, but if you think it helps, it does.
Well, the same thing happened to Dave King. Dave King was a huge, strong man. What we're talking about is the catcher in the Cubs couldn't hit the size of his hat the first 4 months of the season.
And he was a 170 hitter.
And he looked bad. I mean, he was a proud 170. And all of a sudden, he got hurt. So he's on the, and in the meantime, well, he started practicing without stepping into the ball, just keeping his left foot down. And all of a sudden, the guy's seeing the ball. God bless. He's had some days where he's 3 for 4, 4 for 4, and he's hitting home runs. I mean, talk about, you know, but he must have practiced that or worked that. But, I mean, he's not 6'6", man mountain like Dave Kingman, but the guy's still got power. I mean, it's, I don't know. Well,
yeah, you know, if you look at what he's done, he is now, his batting average is .243. And at the All-Star break, it was probably, you know, .180.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, that's dramatic. And we're seeing the same thing with Crow Armstrong. You know, he's up to .233, and he was the same thing. He was well below the Mendoza line. These are things that it's just a transformation, and it gives you a lot of hope because everybody had been talking. You know, I think Crow Armstrong was pretty well set in their plans, and they just wanted him to they wanted him to play this year. But the Amaya, they have a catching prospect, a hot stuff catching prospect in the minors. And, you know, you had a lot of fans saying, well, they should bring that guy up. He can't be any worse than this. And it turns out now they have a 25-year-old catcher who, let's see if it continues. Let's see how it progresses into next year. But sure seems to have a good trend going.
Well, Crow Armstrong was an interesting, still is, but I mean, the guy has a gene set. I mean, we could be looking at a generational player with that guy. Certainly in the outfield, but he, every time he came up, he looked totally overmatched, like 0-for-10. And then when they shipped him back down, he'd light the place up. So it was pretty obvious he just needed to be up here. I mean, he wasn't going to get any better in AAA because he was already lighting them up. And sure enough, it took a few months, and kid's got some power, and he doesn't mind bunting. But all of a sudden, now he's a threat. And God, if he gets on base, when are they going to do something intelligent and put him in the leadoff spot? Just saying.
Oh, why rush, Tom?
Well, because
we saw what happened. We saw what happened with Crow Armstrong's development, and it's coming along nicely. Let's let it keep going. Yeah, I would. He's batting at the bottom of the order anyway. He comes around to the good hitters. The only difference is he probably gets, you know, an average of something approaching one less at-bat per game than he would in the leadoff spot. But he's, you know, let's let him go. Let him, you know, maybe.
But, I mean, he's 25 for 25 stealing bases or something.
Well, he actually does have a caught stealing.
Now, you know, I'm going to, without boring the hell out of everybody, and then we'll go to break. What did you make of that call, that scoring call? He was on third base. And it was some sort of a...
It was supposed to be a squeeze. It was
supposed to be a squeeze, and Hap whiffed on the ball, so he got caught off third base. And the guy, I really like the color guy on the radio. It's Ron Coomer. He's telling Pat Hughes, he goes, that's not how you score that. He got caught off, but he wasn't stealing. He wasn't coming home. He was going back to third. How is that caught stealing? He's picked off. It's not a stealing attempt.
A pickoff is a caught stealing. If the pitcher picks you off of first base, it's a caught stealing.
So that if you're picked off, I'm 0-for-1 stealing?
Well, yeah, you would be. If you got picked off, you'd be 0-for-1 stealing.
But I would never steal.
You'd never even consider trying it. So,
well,
yeah, you'd be 0-for-1. Hey, our buddy, my buddy Joe, who is a loyal listener, texted me, said Nelson Cruz recommended that Amaya eliminate his leg kick for a toe tap.
Really?
Cruz is friends with one of the Cubs' assistant hitting coaches.
Really?
Yep. So, yep, came from a buddy.
Let's go to a quick breaker. SP Futures up 24, NASDAQ Futures up 143. We're trying to get back to where we were yesterday. You know, I'm still not, couldn't figure out why we went down in the afternoon, but we did. Maybe we'll make it up today, day before the holiday weekend. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 141. The headline says, S&P 500 Futures climb as traders brace for key fictional. No, they didn't say fictional. That's an ad lib. Inflation report. Ricky, are you bracing yourself?
Yes, I am.
Well, stay braced over there till this number comes out.
I got
you. Dow futures up 101 individual stocks. I've got Amgen up 99 cents. I've got Microsoft up 282. It was up a bunch yesterday as well. Nike's up 29 cents. Nothing crazy, but up a little bit. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 285. That's 0.7%, 38,647. The Hang Seng up 202. Big move for those guys. It's 1.1%, almost 18,000, 17,989. Shanghai actually does something today, too, up 19 points, 0.7%, 28,42. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 30.1%, the FTSE up 22.2%, CAC around up 23.3%, so up, but fairly muted. Bonds unchanged, 3.86, the 10-year rate. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.26. Japan unchanged, 0.89. Oil down 7 cents, mired at this mid-70s, is 75.84. I'm glad I'm not an oil trader. Boy, what a snoozer the last few weeks it's been. Brent down 7 cents, 79.87. Natural gas up a penny, 215. It was under $2 and has bounced back. RBOB unchanged, 225. Gold, which has been pretty high, down $7 today, 25.53. Still over 2,500, so that's a high number for gold. Silver down 7 cents, 29.91. It's funny, every time this thing gets over 30, it's been a sell. Of course, the one time I do that, we'd probably be trading 40 in 2 days. Copper up 3 cents, 425, foreign exchange. The dollar is set to snap 5-week losing streak. So it's back down to under 111 on the euro, 110.9. In the pound, it's 130. Pound is still pretty much there, 132. Japan is 145, so it was 163, which was very low. Then it was 143, which got it pretty high. Now it's at 145. Bitcoin, up $5, 59,398, so not much going on there. Ricardo, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:44 a.m. here in Chicago. 72 degrees right now with a high of 89. Time so clouds and sun with a thunderstorm. Very warm and humid. Should be clearing out tonight with a low of 68 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona. We're looking at 88 degrees right now with a high of 110. Mostly sunny and hot. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. Tonight will be mainly cloudy with a low of 85 degrees. On to traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 20 minutes. We're looking at 40 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 27 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 24 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 27 minutes. Lastly, sports. In the MLB yesterday, the White Sox lose to the Rangers 2-1, and the Diamondbacks lose to the Mets 3-2. Today we got a couple of games. Cubs play the Nationals at 5:45 p.m. White Sox play the Mets at 7:10 p.m. and the Diamondbacks play the Dodgers at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
I bet the Nationals have one of their best crowds of the year with the Cubs there this weekend.
They might, yeah.
I actually saw the Cubs
play. Labor Day weekend, good road trip, yeah.
I actually saw the Cubs
play. The Dollar had a five-week losing streak, and the White Sox looked at him and said, that's nothing.
Yep, it's I was there. I actually went to two Cub games in a row there on Nationals. That's a
kind nice of ballpark?
Marginal. It's real high. I mean, there's like five decks behind home plate. In fact, you'll hear the announcers always bitching because they're way up there. You can barely see anything. I was like on the fourth level, and I'm like, wow.
Well, you remember when they opened the ballpark for the White Sox at first? Now they fixed that up a little bit, but it was such a steep pitch in the upper deck.
Yeah.
To try to bring people close. I remember seeing a cartoon in one of the newspapers that had a hot dog vendor with the carton of hot dogs on strapped over his shoulder, held him with one arm, and walking with a climbing hook.
God, well, if you see these stadiums, and I don't know, Kevin, you get observant as you get older. But you walk into the one at Baltimore, you walk into the one at Sox Park, you walk into Cleveland. Cleveland is, other than a few differences, it's the same park. Stadium club's just on the other side. The pitch is exactly the same. The way the seats are arranged, they're the same. It's all done by that group out of Kansas City. Or is the main architect to a lot of these places.
Yeah, I think it's like HOA or something like that.
Yeah, and so you can tell all the similarities of kind of all of them. And yeah, the upper deck, and the only one that's somewhat different, and the thing that, peeves me about old parks or new parks, is the upper deck really isn't an upper deck. The lower deck goes back as far as you can take it. Then they have skyboxes, and then the upper deck starts behind the last row of the lower deck. So there's no overhang.
That's so that they can have no obstructions, but the price you pay for it is that they're farther away from the field. That's why they put the steep pitch on there, so that they can bring you a little closer to the field.
But you can have no obstructions.
You don't get vertigo.
You can have no obstructions. As a matter of fact, when I think it was when Comiskey Park, the old one, was built, it was either that or Wrigley. At the time they built it, they said, if you don't want any obstructions, we can cantilever the upper deck. And it was like $100,000 more than whenever they built the place. And the Comiskey said, no. You don't need poles in the thing if you do it properly. But anyway, the only one that I saw is kind of like our kind of park is Pittsburgh. Because there's only one level of skyboxes instead of two. And there's a somewhat of an overhang. It's not like Wrigley or old Comiskey were, but it's still, if you're in the first row of the upper deck, you're closer than the last row of the lower deck. That's a really nice park, Pittsburgh.
It is a nice park, and I've been there, and while I do think it's a really nice ballpark, I'm not as swept away with it as a lot of people seem to be.
Well, it's the only one that's somewhat like the parks we used to like. The two layers of skyboxes really puts the upper deck people in orbit. Because you're just that far up, right?
Yeah.
The one layer essentially puts you in whatever seat you have in the upper deck, you're immediately 15 feet closer, right?
I think that was one thing I always liked about Milwaukee's ballpark, is it really, the lower row of suites was right behind the box seats, and then right on top of, directly on top of those suites was their 200 level.
Right.
And then the 300 level had the upper level of suites. So it, you sort of had a box seat view from the lower suites, which was great if you were in one of them, because usually, you go get in the luxury suites and you're so damn far away from the game, you can't see it. You're not there to watch the game, though. You're there to socialize and be seen and all of those things. What they do is in Milwaukee, they haven't raised it so damn far to get that lower level in there that the 200 level seats are still really good, and the 300 aren't half bad either.
Well, the White Sox, how can I say this charitable to my Southside friends? The crowd used to be, in a lot of ways, a horrible crowd in the old park. It was a real Friday night drinking, fighting crowd. I mean, if you went there on a Friday night and you didn't see two, three fights coming in or going out or in the place, and they had this reputation of everybody's drunk. I mean, it's what they used to call it, the biggest open-air saloon in the world or something.
or something like that. But yeah, it was like, you know, and everybody who would run on the field and get arrested seemed to come from Worth.
Yeah, and then they said, okay, we're building this new place, and we're going to essentially attract another crowd. So we're going to have a box seat, we're going to have a layer of skyboxes, we're going to have a mezzanine level, right? And then we're going to have another layer of skybox. So we're going to keep the rabble away from the new crowd we're trying to attract. I really think that was part of it, Kevin.
Oh, that could be. I'm okay with the ballpark there. I think it's a decent place to see a game. But it's kind of sanitized, and I think that sort of sums up the White Sox in many ways. There's a lack of taste in everything that the Reinsdorf clan does.
What we're going to talk to Carl a little bit in a second, and I don't when we talk, I mean, even if I try and get off the topic, it keeps popping right back. I mean, the idea of this price level, and you'll hear people talk about, you know, all day long about the inflation rate, 2%, 2.5%, 3%. Kevin, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, I heard somebody on one of the business channels talk about the difference between the price level and the thing, and got, oh no, that was you yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was you in your interview where you got the big hooray.
Yeah, I mean, but the difference, now the question is, what do you do about it, if anything? I mean, you can sit there like a dummy and continue to talk about 2 or 2.5% going forward. That's not the issue. Right now, the prices of stuff, you name it, houses, cars, whatever, is pretty much eclipsed any young person ever, not any, but well, if you got any student loans, have eclipsed anybody's ability to do what our parents and maybe we had the ability to do when we grew up. And it's a massive problem, Kevin. And then some people, I mean, the rent's always going to be ridiculous high for people who own places, and you know, people can't afford them. And yet, you know, there's no matching up between the income and the other stuff. Now, I mean, Bitcoin's 60-some thousand bucks. There's trillions of dollars in something that's worth nothing. Well, in my opinion. But it's obviously worth something today because you can sell it for that. And by the way, you question how much to buy it. So it's not worth nothing. But I'm saying there's 172,000 Bitcoin millionaires. Some guy working all day long. And there's, if you ever remember, was it Ken Burns did the, he did the thing for the Civil War, right, which got him on the map. But he also did one on the 29 crash. And he's talking about some guy who had his money in the market, some younger guy, and his dad's still slaving away in the factory. And he says, "Dad, you're going to factory, you're going to work every day, you're breaking your back for a diamond. All you got to do is buy this stuff, and it goes up every day, and you make more than you're going to make in your whole lifetime slaving away for this guy." And it gets to the point now where if you just can own the right stuff, if your dad gives you a bunch of stock, you never have to pay taxes on it. I mean, it's so, I won't say the term rigged. And by the way, I'm in the business of making money for people. So it's not like, I mean, I don't think people should make money, Kevin. I mean, for God's sake, this run up in gold, we've had the best few months for a lot of our people we've had in years. So the fact that I can see my clients' accounts more than the day before, hey, I'm happier than a pig in slop. I mean, it's there's no question. But the point is, where are we going with this? Are we going to cancel? Are we really going to have 2%, 3%, and 5%? Now, a lot of people have 401ks and IRAs here and play other places that are participating to a smaller or a larger extent. But is it sustainable? I guess. I mean, you know, Carl's going to say someday, somewhere, there's going to be like a 1929 crash because the same thing happened in the 20s. It was an amazing accumulation of wealth to some people. Everybody else wasn't doing so hot. All of a sudden, one day, it all kind of came apart. Now, this time, are the orchestrators, are, you know, the people pulling the strings, are they that much smarter where that's not going to happen, or it's just going to happen in a different way? Or I don't want to see that happen. Yet, I don't see how this goes on in a social sort of thing. I mean,
how does it end well?
Yeah, or, well, maybe it's just going to be like this. I mean, when you, the other flip side is if you just gave my argument on national TV and I was going to be point counterpoint, I could very easily say, Kevin, hey, chief, you're an idiot. for the entire part of the world. Go back to the time that there was, you know, written any kind of records of what people did. The only vestige of a middle class is in the U.S., maybe Britain, maybe France, Germany, from 1948 to whatever year you want to pull a plug, 1988 or 1990 or something. Maybe 2000 if you really want to push it. Is that just a 40-year anomaly in human history? Maybe it is, Kevin. Maybe that's the way it's always going to be. 2 or 3% of the people hold all the other stuff, and the rest of the people are serfs.
Well, two comments about that. So one is, let's say, for argument's sake, that we had people who were capable of putting together an economic trajectory, an economic plan and trajectory that would allow real wages to, over time, catch up to the price level, and that we could manage the price level with some kind of stability because we'd manage the money supply properly and start working down the debt. And let's just say we could do that, and that there would be, you know, there would certainly be some pain along the way, but we could get there without the big crash. How long do you think that would take? Long time. So now we've got, we have a restless generation that is totally cut out of, you know, any prosperity in the interim, and we have a whole lot of other people who are just, you know, they're trying to cope on a day-to-day basis, and it's not very manageable for them either. So, you know, so that's where we're sitting on that angle, and that's with the assumption that it can be done without a big hit to it.
Well, Kevin, it I don't know if it can be, but here's where I constantly disagree with Carl. And by the way, neither one of us are going to be in the Oval Office, so it doesn't matter. But I think it's worth a try.
I think, and I can salute that. That's, you know, that it is worth a try. You know, I mean, that's what Simpson Bowles was, 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was, was a try, and it got ignored.
So
that's the assumption that people could do better.
But you,
do we have anybody that you think can do better?
You mean,
let's not even look at this year's presidential race.
No.
Forget that. Do you see anybody who seems visionary enough and is not just locked into the system and is now a product of the system? You see anybody like that who's who would be capable of pulling this off?
I'm not talking about the thought process.
I'm talking about the ability to lead the country, be a political leader, be an effective leader. Who is out there that could actually do this?
I don't know that. Let's say there was somehow or another, the Stocks and Jacks people were transported into some power spot. No, that's never going to happen. A lot of things are. I'm going to say, Kevin, how the hell can I say this? Virtually every law of economics that I've learned, and everything, you know, from labor economics to urban economics to whatever, because of the, I'm going to say, the distortions in the system don't work. I mean, you and I, and not just you and I, everybody on the thing are talking about, these people are making this. Should they make, the people at McDonald's, should they make a little more? Should they make a little less? And then somebody's going to come out and say, well, and then hell's all over the minimum wage laws. Well, geez. You know, if you should work for here because, but I think what Hal's missing is that his view of competitive economy is nothing like this. Now, what should be the theory, Kevin, theory again. Now it's boy talking about in the rear window, is if you and I get hired, somebody should be willing to pay. The last person hired should exactly equal what we do for the firm. In other words, if you got all this capital equipment, all this really good stuff, and maybe you got, you know, whatever, a good process, the first few people you're hiring, even if you pay them a lot, their production is going to be pretty darn good. So you're going to make the difference between what they're giving you and what you're selling it for, right? What you're paying them and what you're selling it for. And as time goes by, you're going to continue to hire because every person who you can pay $10 an hour and gives you $11, you're going to hire, right? because you're picking up a buck. But it's, but over time, it's going to go lower and lower. So the last person, it's called the wages should be at least the marginal the marginal good to the company as the last person hired. If you're talking about McDonald's or these places that are this big, there's no thought of that, Kevin. If you and I, we decide to ditch what we're doing, which neither one of us are going to do, and get hired by Walmart in the tire thing, I'm going to guess, just because of our personalities, inside of 6 months, we're selling 40% more tires than they ever sold. A, because we'd be bored if we didn't, and B, because, you know, I think we both know something about tires. So, but there's nothing in the Walmart chain of command that says we're going to give these guys a bump. And there's probably not a tire store. Actually, tires are probably still pretty competitive. There's not going to be somebody who says, hey, these two idiots over at Walmart are selling tires right and left. Why don't we hire them for our place? I mean, that all the stuff that's supposed to happen to keep the economic stuff together, the freedom to move, the education, all that stuff seems to be distorted, doesn't it?
I mean, well, it does seem to be distorted, but ultimately, see, the cost structure is supposed to respond to what customer demand is. I mean, that's
right.
That's really how you run efficiently. Is you're meeting a need, and you're meeting a need at a price that you can, where you can afford to deliver it. So, I think it really, as much as anything, it boils down to that, and then you start looking at and how you can do it. Can you do it at the price people are willing to pay? Well, right now, let's use minimum wage and McDonald's as an example. Right now, McDonald's has seen a lot of hit to their volumes. You know, like everybody in retail, prices are up. Prices have now gone so high that people are bitching about what it costs to go to McDonald's. That you get, it's going to be $8-$10. You know, I talk to people all the time. They say, yeah, but I can't afford to take two kids and, a family of four. I can't afford to go to McDonald's because it's going to cost us $30-$40. And two people going out when the power is out 2 days ago, and two of us going over to the local tavern and grabbing a bite and a beer. That's a $50-$60 trip. So, you're seeing it everywhere. So, they're trying to respond by having at least a limited amount of menu, because their costs are way up. Not just it's their cost of supplies, but now let's pile on a labor cost increase on there. How do you deal with that?
I'm going to say, Kevin,
as well be a rent cost increase. It could be any, you pick any cost. But now you're at a price point where people won't buy your stuff, and your costs are continuing to go up. We got a problem here.
We got a huge problem, and I'm going to say head over to Carl.
Now, how do you solve it?
I think
you either solve it by squeezing it a little bit more, or you're going to have to shift to a completely different process. You're going to go to automation, and you're just going to throw a whole bunch of people out of work.
Well, I think the if we went back and were to analyze it. If we had the time and we had open books, I'm going to say it is not the cost of the beer and the chicken. It's the cost of the lease. And that's basically, it's back to where we started the conversation. I think
it may be, except that you're also seeing the cost of the lease that has been in place for years and years.
Well, they're not adverse to up in some of it. Some of them are long term. Some of them are not.
Some of it's long term, some of it's not, and some of it is tied into, what's the gross versus what's the net, because if you have, if you're going to get an increase for taxes, utilities, et cetera, then that's going to pile on regardless of any other factors related to the lease.
Okay, but I'm going to say
it is all a variable cost equation, but you got to find you're either going to go out of business, or you're going to find ways to squeeze more out of your system.
Well, the place that bothers the bejesus out of me, because I've had to go there like 8 weeks in a row, is these guys putting a deck on my place. And the two kids love Chick-fil-A, right? They must think it's healthy or something. That place, lunch for four people, we're talking, the sandwiches aren't big enough for the kids to be full, right? Even with the meal, so that we got to get two cups of the chicken fingers, right? They're $12.50 a piece, and there's maybe 4 ounces of chicken in there, and you can get chicken breasts anywhere you want for $2 a pound. I mean, so you know, the bag I walk out of there with is somewhere in the mid '60s, the high '60s, and we got a salad, we got three lunches. And Kevin, I'm going to say that the cost of the food in the bag is not $5. Maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not even for them to say those costs are up.
What's all the rest of the cost?
I'm saying it's not the chow. The guy who I remember this. He was the head of White Castle. This is long before COVID, and of course they never asked them back. They said, what is the biggest challenge to the restaurant industry? And this is, like I said, it's long before this inflation started. He goes, the biggest challenge we have is the difference between eating out, the price of eating out, and the price of eating at home has never been bigger. It has to have at least doubled since then. I mean, you know, Audrey and I went to breakfast last week at a neighborhood place, and Odd's the best, so I'm not going to give her any grief. But what did the girl and Cubs say? It's girl math. Guy buys dinner for $100. The girl buys breakfast for $40, and you're even. Anyway,
yeah, no, I know. You should get to Carl.
Let me real quick because
I'm going to tell you, you're not. You know, there's a big accounting for everything else that goes into running it. Just looking at the cost of the food. That's a minor piece.
Oh, sure it is. That's essentially this guy's point. So we had, you know, breakfast was good. We had a couple of omelets, and it's, you know, whatever. Well, we had two iced teas, you know, one glass of iced tea apiece, $3.75 a pop.
Yeah, no kidding. You're going to make it up somewhere.
Yeah, it's not in, when they say it's the cost of food, I guess if it's steaks, yeah. But a good steak joint, they're going to charge you $65 for the steak anyway. So it's not like they haven't run up on the stuff. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much. Good stuff. Have a nice weekend. What are you? Anything special?
No, I've got a project here at the house, so I'm going to work on this week.
All right. Good luck with that. And you can let us know the price at the Home Depot next week.
Okay.
All right, bud. You want to go right to Carl, Ricky?
Yeah.
Carl, I assume you've been listening and have comments on everything we said.
Oh, good Lord. So, let's start with a simple one. Shall we start with a simple one?
If you can find a simple one in there, yeah.
Okay. 2002. From Scott McNeely. Remember him?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a quote. At 10 times revenues, stock price, right? To give you a 10-year payback, I have to pay you 100% of revenues for 10 straight years in dividends. This assumes I can get that by the shareholders. That assumes I have zero cost of goods sold, which is kind of hard for a computer company.
Yep.
That also assumes zero expenses, which is really hard with 39,000 employees. That assumes I pay no taxes, which is really hard too. And it also assumes that you pay no taxes on your dividends, which is kind of illegal.
Right. And hard because you get the statement.
Well, by the way, that also assumes with zero R&D for the next 10 years, I can maintain that revenue run rate. Now, having done all of that, that is a premise. Would you like to buy my stock at $64?
Well, I think there have been stacks as they grow. I'm following what your lead here.
I know where you're going to go, okay? But here's the thing. Here's the rest of what he said. He says, do you realize how ridiculous these assumptions are? You don't need transparency. You don't need footnotes. You're buying and owning something at this price. What else do we need to explain? This is obviously nothing other than speculative hype at those prices, because it cannot be otherwise. Mathematics is a set of facts. Now, here's another one.
But you and I are going to be able to find a company at 10 times revenue that's, quote, worth it. But now, I've got, like, I think Microsoft, is it 12 times revenue? How can they grow? How can they grow into that?
Well, you can't. That it now, you know, little companies potentially, you know, that are unproven. Well, if they all of a sudden become proven, right?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, there is such a thing as taking a gamble on where the possibility exists that these things could be fulfilled, right? And yet today they're not. But the entire market, the whole thing, I don't care where you look, is in this state now, as was Sun Microsystems at the time. Okay. And then you look at the cost side, okay? And remember, you know, you guys just got done talking about the cost side of
yep.
things.
Right? Nobody wants to look at that anymore. It's
nobody wants to. That's right. Well, nobody really wants to look at that. Okay. Well, my article this morning is about exactly this, because we just had Pamela, who was supposed to sit down for an hour long interview with CNN. It wasn't live. They billed it as a live conversation. Then we found out it really wasn't, a couple of days ago, that wasn't what was going to happen, that it was going to be taped and edited. They ended up with 18 minutes of usable footage. All right, which is, so that tells you a lot right there, right? They refused to release, CNN will not release the transcripts, so we don't even know what they took and what they cut. All right, so this was, now, by any reasonable standard, this is a uncompensated in-kind campaign contribution when you do something like that. It's not an interview. All right, because you could...
Well, so Trump could demand the same thing.
Well, I understand this, but he won't get it from any of the media outlets. Trump doesn't do that. He's, you know, I mean, the hell, he sat down with Tucker Carlson. They ran the entire thing unedited. It's, you know, long-form tape. And he's done a number of others as well. I mean, it's, you know, not just one. Point being this, one of the points she was challenged on was back when she was originally running for president, back before Biden was elected in 2020, and everybody, I don't know how short attention spans are, but she was one of the first people to be ejected by the primary process because she got no delegates. Well, you don't get any delegates, you're wasting your time and your money. But one of the things she said she would do on day one is ban fracking. Okay? She was called on this during this interview.
People evolve.
Well, except she didn't say that she had. She said she'd never made that claim that she was going to do that. Well, yes, she did. And oh, by the way, in some states, they have gone an awfully long way down the road of doing things like this, and in some countries they've done it too. I mean, Germany has taken their nuclear contribution to their electrical grid to zero over the last...
Which is so insane, I can't believe it, but they did.
Well, they did, and guess what? In New Jersey, they've done the same sort of thing. Now, here's the thing about this. We were all told, Chief, by all these guys, all right, the entire Democrat Party, all of them, that green energy was going to be better for the planet, and it was also going to not be materially more expensive, or would actually be cheaper. All right? This is what we were told. What actually happened in New Jersey, because they did this, is your power bill has doubled. By the way, in California, where they did this...
It's doubled here, too. It's doubled here, too.
Well, and guess what? In California, where they did this, your power bill has tripled. Okay? Now, may I point out that through all the inflation and everything else, my power bill is up about 10%.
Yeah, but you got to hang around with all these people in Tennessee.
Okay, so you know what? So let me...
I'm not
so,
saying that. I'm just kidding you.
Oh, no,
that, you know?
I understand that, Chief, but here's the point. If you steal, when you tell me as a politician and you set a policy and you mandate it, all right, so you take reliable generating devices that can make their nameplate rating, All right, for those who don't know, the nameplate rating is what's stamped on the side of the box. How much power comes out of this thing? Okay. We operate this. We put coal into it. We put natural gas into it. We put nuclear fuel into it, whatever we put into it. And the nameplate rating is the rated output that it is capable of. And you take that and you turn it off. And yet it can produce its nameplate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except for the time during which it's broken. The rest of the time, that's what it can make. Okay, fine. And everything has a maintenance requirement. So, you know, it's not 100%. But many of these things have, outside of maintenance periods, they have 99% reliability or better. And you replace it with a set of solar panels, which has the same nameplate rating. However, it can only produce its nameplate rating when the sun is shining, there are no clouds, and 12 hours out of the day, it can't produce anything because it's dark. All right? And then you have the same situation with wind generators. All right? They have a nameplate rating. However, they can only produce that when the wind is blowing.
And the dirty little secret there is the ones like in Indiana here, I think you know where those are, right? That big wind farm down in Indiana?
Yeah.
If you go by there, even on a breezy day, if it's like 60 degrees or something, they're all turned off because Commonwealth Edison doesn't need them on the grid.
Well, right. So the thing is that there's, why did they build all those ones that they can turn off? And the answer is because you have to put in three times the nameplate rating in order to actually have what you want.
Well, it all comes, I think, you know, because
you can't plan for what's dispatchable.
But you ran a business. You know the million variables that go into it. And I think when we have politicians and some people that have never done that, somehow they don't get it. I mean, to have a big like wind farm without the latest conductive wiring from there to Chicago or Hammond or wherever the hell else you're going is kind of useless. And, oh, by the way, if Commonwealth Edison says, I'm perfectly happy running my gas plant here and I don't want to buy your stuff today, that's the how the grid is managed. Does anybody even know?
Chief, the point being this, you doubled the input cost, and then you're surprised when the price doubles.
I'm saying
the thing is this shows up everywhere in the economy.
I would be the single biggest. I mean, I'm not talking about these people talking out of the side of their mouth because that's what they do with politicians. I mean, you and I, as much as we go down the drain by being truthful, if we were running for office, we'd probably have a slightly different speech to the teachers' union as we would to somebody else in regarding the future of the teachers' union. You know what I'm saying? You're going to bend your story because you're selling yourself to get votes. I mean, that's the deal.
Well, of course. That's what politics is.
So I would be, over the long haul, Chicago's a disgrace here in a lot of ways, but it is so much healthier to breathe here than it did when I was a kid. It's scary.
Oh, I look.
You know, so I mean, what I would do, Carl, and I would need people like you to know more about this than I do. Tell me the places where it's only an idiot wouldn't have renewable energy. I'm going to say,
where there's hydro for one thing, because that's a essentially zero pollution option. Okay, but we've exploited essentially all of that which is exploitable within the United States. And the other side of it is that, you know, I mean, you can look at, for example, solar. In the summertime, solar panels happen to match up pretty well with the demand peak that comes from air conditioners, right? Because when do you want your air conditioner blasting? Well, at the same time the sun's blazing, right? I mean, that works out pretty good. The problem is you have to pay for them for all the time. You can't just pay for them and have them there when the sun's blazing and it's 95 degrees out. You have to pay for them all the time. And in the winter, when it's 20 below zero. When does that happen? Well, at 2 in the morning. The sun's never up at 2 o'clock in the morning. All right? So the reality is that thermodynamics is not a suggestion. I mean, laws of physics, they're not something you can negotiate with. They're facts.
Right, and I don't want to be like, you know, the captain where Scotty says you can't change the laws of physics. What I'm talking about, Carl, is some semblance of common sense. I mean, which we seem to have a shortage of. I mean, Audrey and Nancy just did a mortgage. You know, well, Nancy did the mortgage. Audrey, I think, I don't know if she had the seller or the buyer, whatever the hell she did. But I honestly don't want to get into their stuff because it's their business. But I catch wind of the fact that the people had these solar panels on the roof in some sort of a 15 or 20 year mortgage on the house for the panels.
Yeah. And yeah, this is very common.
And I'm sitting there going, I said, I don't want to know the details, but say what? But no, I would never recommend that. Like, neither would you. However, if you ever been to Hoover Dam, I imagine you have.
Yeah, I have. It's kind of cool.
It's amazingly cool, and if you read the stories about the people and being built and so forth, it's really something. Anyway, but if you look,
we couldn't do it today with all the regulations.
Oh no way. But now, if you look around, you see massive amounts of transformers and wires. By the way, I should know the answer to this. I know you do. If you have generators producing DC, the stuff that goes on the wires is already turned into AC, right? It's already transformed?
Well, okay, so that depends. The older style stuff, yes, that's true, and there's a problem with that. it's the reason you have substations along the long-distance transmission lines that are AC. And it's that you don't think of wire as having capacitance, but it does. It's called reactance with alternating current. But essentially what it boils down to is that when you put the energy in on one end, it's not instantaneously coming out the other end. There is a propagation delay. And the problem with that is that, so alternating current, it goes from has a positive to negative swing, right, on a cycle. It's called RMS, root mean square, which is how the voltage, but the actual peak-to-peak voltage is much higher than that. It's about 1.6 times. So the problem with this over distances is that you get a lag from one end to the other, okay? And that reactive power creates instability. So you have to have a transformer every so often, because if you don't, what comes out the other end will create a back pressure. It's an inefficiency, and it can cause an instability in the generator at the point at which it actually will trip
offline, well,
and then you get nothing.
Next time you're there, if you look south,
right,
and turn right, you're going to see a valley that is as flat as this table. It is so friggin' hot, I don't even think a scorpion can live out there. And it probably goes for 30 miles.
Right.
Now, explain to me, Lucy, the same reason why I said maybe somebody doesn't really want one of these things on their house, why that valley is not loaded with solar correctors when you've got the wires to send the hydroelectric power every different direction you
well,
can.
Well, the hydro is AC, okay? But
you know what I'm talking about. You have the capability of getting this stuff out of there.
Right. I'm just saying, but the wires are AC, but the solar panels generate DC, okay?
Yeah, but don't the water rushing around those generators, that's DC, right?
No, a spinning turbine, the easiest design generates alternating.
Okay, right. And I thought it was a DC thing. Okay, but no, I'm saying, you have the capability right there to send it all kinds of directions. If ever there's a place to put a solar panel, it's right there, and there's none.
Oh, there's all kinds of, there's plenty of places where it makes sense if the load at that time is dispatchable, and therefore you can actually use it. Okay,
well, now if you, what do you think? How many air conditioners do you think they got going in Vegas and L.A. and Phoenix today?
I'm not arguing that there aren't places where it makes sense. Okay, there clearly are, and you know, places where the land is essentially useless for anything else.
Well, right? I was driving when I bought the red truck that Audrey hated down in Tucson. I'm driving it back along what used to be 66. It's now 40. Wow, the relentless winds, the relentless sun. I got the air conditioner cranking. I'm fighting the wind, and I'm going, I see a train go by with these locomotives, and I go, if ever there is an area that we can have 200 or 300 miles where we unclip those things and use electric locomotives, this is it.
Well,
give me two windmills, and I'm saying there's places where it's so obvious that you can use this stuff, and we're not there, and yet we're trying to put them on houses in Chicago in the middle of winter.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of stupidity all the way around. And one of the things that has happened in the last 20 years or so, when the electrical grid was originally constructed, the problem with direct current is that transforming it up and down in terms of voltage is difficult. Now, today we have semiconductors that can do it. But at the time that the grid was constructed, that wasn't really possible. So the easy way to do it with alternating current is a transformer, which is not very hard to build. And so that's one of the reasons. And the bottom line is that it is the number of amps that goes down the wire that controls the size of the cable that you need. And so for transmitting large amounts of electricity over long distances, you want very high voltage because that makes the amps go down, okay? And that means that the wire costs less money and is easier to support with the towers and things like this. You couldn't take the standard power that runs around your town, which is probably 4,800 volts in most places, and put that on a high voltage transmission line. The cable would be the size of a bus, okay, in diameter. So you couldn't do that. So they don't.
That's why they use 220 in Europe instead of 110, because the wire's going to be narrower, right?
The history on that's a little weird, because Europe has a different distribution system. Your home's power in the United States is split phase, so you actually have 240 volt power at your panel. But your outlets are typically 110, except for like your dryer and your stove and stuff like that, and your air conditioner. And the reason that your stove is 220 is because otherwise it would have to be the amperage would have to go up, and therefore the size of the wire would have to go up, and you know, it gets more complicated.
Plus, it's cheaper, right?
Well, the other argument is that there was debate about, okay, on us from a safety level, from an insulation level, what should we use, right? The reality of it is that there isn't a whole lot of difference in terms of human life safety between 110 and 220. If you get grounded and it goes through your body, both will fry you.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, that's the way it is. But go ahead and try to change that once infrastructure has been built out and appliances have been made and sold. Forget about it. All right. Now, modern electronics today, I mean, if you go buy a computer power supply today, it will eat anything from 110, about down to about 100 volts, actually, up to 240, without throwing any switches or anything like that. I mean, it has no problem with that. But your average motor, no, can't do that. All right. So,
well, you know, some of these decisions are, you know, back, and after a break, Carl, I want to go to, we'll talk about these, the PCE will be out, but I also want to talk about what that is. And, by the way, I just dug up here, when you started the show, you were talking about times revenue. The Microsoft revenue per share is only $32, which puts it at 32 goes into 416, 13 times, 13 and a half times.
Yeah, it sounds like Sun, doesn't it?
For something that big. You know, we made probably a crummy decision back in the day. There were two gauges of railroads. The North, I think, had, for those that don't know, I mean, nobody wants to hear about railroad stuff, but I say it anyway. The North had, I think, 4 feet, 8.5 gauge, and the South had 5 feet. And right. I think most of Europe, in fact, the Soviet Union, all has 5 feet. But the North, so the decision was made by none other than who? You should know this.
Oh, I don't know who actually.
Abraham Lincoln.
Lincoln standardized it. Okay.
He said, we're going to go 4 feet, 8.5. Yeah. And I'm going to say that over however many years, we're pushing 170 or something, we probably would have been better off with 5 foot because you can, it's a little more stable and you can put more weight. And you're probably a little better with the wheels a little further apart. We've managed to do fine at 4 feet, 8.5, but at 5 foot, it would be easier for defense. You could probably get tanks on there where you can't now, those kinds of things. So, yeah, people make these decisions, and you live with them for, like, centuries, right?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, try to change the electrical grid standards today. Forget about, I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, how would you even begin that?
Yeah, that's the entire problem. I mean, it's, you know, once that kind of thing gets into widespread use, forget about it.
Well, let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the PCE, which will be out. SP Futures up 27, NASDAQ Futures up 170. Right back where we were yesterday before we fell apart, so maybe we'll stay in there today. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 25. NASDAQ Futures up 160. These numbers are jumping around because of this core PCE thing. We have month to month. We've got a 0.2 versus 0.2. Yes! I'm not sure what we're yesing here, Ricardo, but yes! We were.
Yes.
The expectators were expectating correctly.
No, 0.3.
Oh, I thought it says up here. Core, I'm looking at 0.2.
You got the old.
I got the core, I guess. 0.2. All right, well, you know where that quote comes from, Ricardo? Long before you, Richard J. Daley, the mayor, said, and Carl probably remembers this, they talk about there's all these allegations, and Daley said, who are all these alligators anyway? So, that's what I say. Who are all these ex-spectators? So, probably the only one who remembers that. Real quick, though, because Asia's closed, we'll give that one. Nikkei up 285.7%. Hang Seng up 202, 1%, almost back to 18,000, 17,989. Shanghai up 19, 28,42. We'll save the rest for a little bit because they're still jumping around. So let's just go right to Carl. The Sox lose, so that's all we need for sports. We're good. Oh, by the way, did you see that? They can't catch a break. Did you see that catch the guy made the other night to save the ball game? The dude in Texas. Carl, it is. You know, you see how these guys go up over the fence and make a catch?
Oh yeah,
this guy's kind of a tall guy, and he's a white guy. He had to be 4 feet over that. He timed it absolutely perfectly,
and he got it.
And he got big, huge run, jumped, and at the absolute peak, his eye-hand coordination. He caught it at the absolute peak of the jump, right in the trap. It couldn't have been an inch one way or the other. If he'd have jumped a millisecond sooner or later, he wouldn't have got it. And he got it, and the batter's just sitting there going, "What the bleep."
He got robbed.
Oh God! So okay, what is this number telling us? I'm on the page.
Okay, so well, you know, some of this is because this is BEA. This is to some extent black box, just like the Bureau of Lies and Scams, right? I mean, you know, they're sisters, they're kissing cousins, I think. But the interesting thing is that you've got supposedly. I don't know if I believe this, but okay, we'll see. They claim there's an 0.4 increase in real PCE with 0.7 in goods and 0.2 in services. They claim the largest increase in goods is in motor vehicles and parts. And within services, the largest contributor to the increase was in healthcare. Now, the other thing is they've also revised everything from April through June because, you know, we like to do that, right? We always do.
Up or down?
Well, I'm looking at this. It looks like we got previous. All right, so in current dollars, June revised down on personal income, down a tick. Down a tick for May as well. So that's not the right direction, right? I mean, you don't want to see that going the wrong way. And they're showing personal consumption expenditures up a tick in current in chained dollars in June and May, and up one tick in current dollars in May, but flat in June. So, okay. By the way, you know how you spell that? You know what the one word is that that you spell that?
Bull.
Inflation.
Yeah. Or that's how you get the credit. Well, here's, I got this guy on the show that has totally screwed me into looking everything long term now. He comes on every Friday. A guy named Carl. If you look at 1980 today, because I was looking at the price of Cubs tickets or something the other day, so I picked 1980 as a day.
Oh, God.
The CPI is up 400% since 1980. So everything should be four times.
Right.
But the PCE is only three times. It was right. It was 40 in the end of 1980, and now it's 120. So anybody who thinks, I was just going through the part about the first prize at the Masters is 65 times what it was in 1980.
Right.
And I was wondering, so I think my first year Cub tickets were, I'm going to say $4, $4.50, somewhere in that range. That was like 1981, call it 1980. And I'm going to say they got to be 85 now. So that's 20 times, not four times. I mean, these are the numbers that people are dealing with. And these guys can talk all they want on TV, whether they're slicing the grapefruit 2.1% or 2.2%. The fact is, for most people, it's way the hell higher than that. It's not even close. Now, Wikipedia, I'm going to ask you this, Carl, before I quote these guys. Nobody else seems to be able to get. Now, these guys claim that they can get this out of the BEA. And they're comparing the PCE with the CPI, both unadjusted and adjusted. Now, I don't know, out of all of us, they've somehow found this. Now, I don't know, and I'm going through the, these are now the weightings, the one we always talk about, the medical weightings and all the other stuff.
Right.
Now, CPI, the ones that are hugely divergent are a rent. How do they have rent at like 4%? I mean, but housing is 32 and rent's 4. So they're not saying that rent is only 4% of
No, they're saying paycheck. That in aggregate, that's the percentage. It's the percentage of household expenditures multiplied by the percentage of people who rent instead of own.
Yeah, because they've got a rent right. thing here. It's 4.1%. You got a housing that's owner's equivalent rent of 16, and other housing, which is going to be hotels and stuff, is 13. And then they right. added up to the 32 here. But here's the one. Medical care in a CPI, which you and I are always bitching about, is 6.2%. In the PCE, unadjusted, it's 22%. They then adjust it down to 5.
Right.
Which I don't. So anybody,
but unadjusted is approximately correct on a GDP basis.
Right. Right. So they've got on an adjusted basis, they've got people paying as much for medical care as they do for gasoline. I mean, really?
Chief, the entire game is to find some way to justify, you know, some of the stuff. It's like as I pointed out, I think it was last week when I was on the show. You know, I got into this thing on X where somebody was like, oh, you know, food inflation's only, you know, 15 or 20% over the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm like, oh, well, I could, let's test this. So I go into Quicken because I put everything on credit card. All right, okay, what did I spend on food for all of 2020? All right, because groceries is groceries, right? Okay, what did I spend on groceries in 2023? I mean, you know, this is the beauty of computers and databases is that they spit these kinds of answers out in, you know, seconds, right? Well, it's a clean double, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit worse than that, actually. It was like 115% or something like that. but it was better than a clean double. And you know, my household size has not changed. What I eat hasn't changed. My body mass hasn't changed. So I'm isocaloric. So I'm eating this. You know, I'm eating the same amount of calories that I was. You know, I still work out the same way I always have, and I haven't added or subtracted anybody the size of my house. So, I mean, you can argue that, you know, energy expenditures maybe would change because, you know, your air conditioner broke and you bought a better one, right? Well, that's not going to be the case here, and it's a double. So you want to try to tell me that's not what food inflation is? Well, of course it's what it actually is.
How many years are you talking?
Over 3 years.
Okay, I would have said... I mean, it depends on what you're buying,
actually,
what you're doing.
Before, but the compounded annual expansion rate is like 23%. Okay, across that period of time.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to say that the stuff that I buy, because I buy a lot of stuff for the office. I still cook because the places that were closing COVID and the other stuff.
Right.
I mean, for God's sake, if we all decided to go out to breakfast here, you know, I don't know. First of all, I don't know where we'd go. It's still not open.
Secondly, it'd be $100.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the stuff that's weird, sometimes, you know, in the office, I'll throw some of those fake mashed potatoes. They were a buck a tin, and now they're $1.49.
Right.
And then peanut butter. That's the stuff that kind of doesn't change. I mean, the eggs and the other stuff go up and down all the time. So, but I don't really look at those. I look at the stuff that I know, you know, the three or four items that I always buy and how they've done. I'm going to say it's probably... somewhere between 35% and 45% across the board since COVID that I see. I mean, you're right. I mean, if you're talking about beef for some reason, is to the moon. I don't know why chicken and pork aren't. But, you know, the guy in the building here, I get the eggs out in the suburbs where there's like five stores within 30 feet of each other. And even now, as high as they are, I can get them in the threes. He tells me that in his neighborhood, they're 7.5. I said, Salvador, when I go on Monday... I'll have two of them with your name on them in the fridge here. I'm not going to let you pay 7 when I'm paying 3.5.
Yeah.
I mean, they're murdering people in the central cities, for God's sake.
Well, but the thing is that, you know, people say, well, you know, but the CPI says, and I say, okay, yes, that's a CPI. But here's the difference. The CPI is a survey, and it's a shelf price, okay? The difference is that during the time before the crazy, and before all the inflation took off, I'd go into Kroger, and I'd have, you know, a $100 basket of groceries. I'd have 20% off from the coupons.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's an $80 basket it's $100 by the shell, but it's $80 out of my checking account, right? Well, now I have $200 in the basket. Okay. But it's not $160. It's
yeah. The coupons are hard to come by.
Well, it's $190 now because there's only $10 worth of discounts in there, right? So the thing is that it's from the customer's point of view, and from your economic point of view as a consumer, it's the ticket, it's the register tape that matters.
Yeah, right.
From the survey's point of view, it's the shelf price that matters. All right. Those are not the same thing.
No.
The BLS does not have access to the tickets. They have the shelf prices. They're very different things.
Well, the bottom line is, after all, the bottom line.
Well, yeah, but from our perspective as consumers, it's the same thing. People say, well, you know, how about this and that? And I'd say, look, you take a look at what's going on right now within real estate. And that they're, you know, people say, well, you know, we can grow into these valuations and people will be able to. No, you can't. No, you can't. Because, first off, that's not going to happen, okay? If salaries and wages continue to go up, so will the prices. And secondly, the other problem is the local and state governments get addicted to the property taxes. And when the prices go up like that, what also goes up is the insurance, because if your place burns, you either have to buy a different one or you have to replace the one that burnt. Okay. Well, if the guy down the street can manage to get 500, why shouldn't it be 500 to build your place back up to what it was? Okay, well, it will be. And so those are sticky as well. And those costs are not one time. Those costs are every year.
Well, that's the shacking cost. My word I came up with shackflation, but I mean, after listening to Kevin and I, you know, Kevin pretty much described it better than I have. We have a generation that sees things priced out of them. They're very restless, and you have a lot of older people who thought they were fixed. Now a lot of them that had money in the market, okay, you've been rewarded from that so far. I use the term so far, and maybe forever. If you retired with $1 million 8 years ago and put it in the bank, you're screwed because your million's worth 600 now at most. I mean, in terms of buying power, I mean, you got trouble. So the question is, is there a chance to bring this back without some sort of an economic, a 1929 sort of fiasco? Because I really don't want to go through that.
No.
Kevin and I, we were talking about you. I don't know if you were listening, but, you know, is it worth a try, or how could you even attempt to try it? And I think, you know, we have a political...
You can't, Chief.
Oh, political world doesn't even realize that it's a problem.
No, the political world thinks it's fine.
Yeah.
But the problem with it is the financing cost at the public, on the public side. Look, the whole driver of this, where did I see it? I don't remember. It was an official government reference, though, that, you know, I've been talking about the fact that just on the federal deficit side, we've been running a 6.2% fiscal deficit this fiscal year, okay, assuming that the next 2 months play out as have the last 10. And therefore, the idea that interest rates are high at 5.25, 5.5 is nuts, that the IRX is trading, you know, 25 basis points under that. Okay, so the Fed could take 25 off and you know, follow the market, which is what they always have done, right? And that would not actually be setting rates. That would be, you know, they're following what the market's already done. But that long money, the 10-year, is trading under 4 is insane.
Right. Right. Well, I'm sure you spotted, but since they don't give it to us very often, that we now are up to 5 months in a row of the money supply increasing. So the Fed has already lowered the rates.
It's already going on.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing that goes along with this. Okay, this report comes out and it says the actual fiscal, the fiscal rate is not 6%. It's 7.2%. So they found another percent in their data tables. Now, I'm not sure where they got it from, right? And I'm trying to run this down. But that's the real inflation rate that's being shoved into the system at a federal level. Leave the states out of it, because the states, theoretically at least, are not supposed to be able to run budget deficits, right? But here we are at and in fact, they kind of sort of can, because...
Well, if they go to work... The cash basis just don't pay anybody till the next year. The deficit.
The other thing is there's some game playing. The states cannot, however, they can sell what are called revenue anticipation notes into the federal system, which is that's kind of the only way they can do it. So they can, but it's a short term cost shift. Okay, so if I give you $20 and then I take it back, should we really count that in inflation? And the answer is, I don't know, only if you count the deflation on the other side, right? Because it comes back out. But that these guys, and this again, this is an official government publication, that, you know, they're showing over 7. Okay, so now what you've got here is that you can claim that, you know, PCE, you know, PCE inflation is, you know, is 2.6. All right, well, you're understating reality
by
5. Well,
for 44 years they've been lying.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying that the real number is 7-ish, okay? And you know, I mean, I'm not going to quibble over...
Well, Carl, well, I mean, knowing...
6-3 or 7-2.
Knowing people that you know, that when you talk about the debates back and forth between this one running for president, that one, this one running for Senate, the bottom line is the bottom line. The bottom line is the single biggest benefactor of inflation is the government. So the idea... That they are going to, unless you have a huge hue and cry like you had in the 70s and 80s where you just gagging your population. Put it this way, the population recognized they were being hosed, and now the population somehow doesn't, they either don't have the political power or something, but the outcry was way worse back then. And there's no way you could have gotten away with it in the Oval Office.
Well, let me tell you where part of the problem is. And this is in I don't know how you fix this. Okay, this is I just had somebody send me a pitch deck, trying to get my interest in solving some of the media concentration stuff. Right. And I said, there's a fundamental, and my reply back to them was that there's a fundamental problem here that I don't know how to fix it. And I don't know that it's fixable. So today, for example, if you look at, if you watch network television, basically every single advertisement is a drug.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't have TV here at the house, but if I go out to watch a sportball game, at a bar, and I'm sitting there.
I'm saying
I tip back a couple of brewskis, and that's all they are. Right?
If there's a site, actually, if you go to the site two or three times, they won't let you back on. But there's a site that will tell you the top 10 and how much they're spending. You can probably do it. I can only recognize two or three of the drugs and what they did. Virtually all of them are for skin issues or for fatso issues.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, yeah. But the thing is that, so think about this. Ask your doctor if this is right for you. Do you actually believe that those are advertisements?
That they aren't? Yeah, they are.
No. Do you believe they're advertisements?
Yes.
They're not. Blackmail.
Well, when they drugs.
Oh,
used,
they used to not
be able to advertise.
No. They're blackmail. They're not advertisements. They're blackmail.
All right, you got to define that.
All right, the correct word is probably extortion. Here's how it works. And this is why fixing this is, you've got the idiot box and you have the social media companies, and that's where people get their information, right? Between those two things.
Well, sure.
Right? You got the television, think about what journalism used to be.
What was Viagra and the other guys, the National Football League, $40 million a year, 50?
Yeah. Now think about this though, Chief. Not that long ago when you had the Tribune and the Sun Times, right? I mean, I live in Chicago. Yeah. We had two newspapers, right? Okay.
Well, we used to have four, but yeah, they got
now. Well, all right. Yeah. Well, when I lived there, there were two. All right, there were two dailies, and well, there were a bunch of others. You had a Chicago Reader. You had some other stuff, but there were two big dailies, and in Detroit it was the Free Press. And I remember there was another one there that went under. But there were two there, too. And this was constant pretty much everywhere. All right. One of the largest advertising blocks in the traditional newspapers was the car dealers every weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Huge section that was all the, all the car dealers. All right. Every now and then, when Ford made exploding Pintos.
Yeah.
There was a nasty spread in the newspaper about exploding Pintos, right? Or whatever the thing was.
Yeah, what a crummy car that was.
Well, my family owned one. My sister actually got rear-ended in it. It didn't explode, but when I went to go get her stuff at the junkyard out of the car, there was gas all over the place. So, I mean, one spark, it would have been kaboom.
The big, huge court case... With the pin, it was the Pinto, right? One of the guys from Pullman actually saw the car, and he goes, "I don't care where that gas tank would have been; it was going up. That the car."
Well, it's going to get punctured, and that's So anyway, the thing is though, is that they ran those articles in the newspaper anyway. All right, now what happens today on social media, on Facebook, on X, on anywhere else? If you allow this stuff, we're going to take our ads and we're going to put them on a competitor. Musk is actually suing over this, okay, over this collusion between advertising groups. I don't know whether he'll get anywhere with a lawsuit or not, but he is suing. And the problem is that, so what do you have as the actual model? Those are not drug advertisements. They are extortion to the network television companies to not point out that, oh, by the way, we went from 5% of GDP in healthcare expenditures to 21% and change.
Well, it'd be really hard to have.
Incidentally, Chief, we also went from 5% of the people in this country with chronic conditions to 50.
What's the fatso drug that's $1,000 a throw?
Ozempic.
Okay, well, that's the one I think that the lady, I got the article, I sent it out to people, says that the actual cost of making it's $5.
Yeah, and it's $25 or something like that in Germany, and it's $1,000.
Well, she's, but she wrote it. She wrote it from CNBC. I mean, she's a CNBC reporter, and I tell you what, I thought she did a terrific job in the article. But it's not the same as them running a commercial, and her being interviewed right after the commercial.
Right.
It's. I mean, I don't know how many people read the articles of the people at CNBC. They're actually pretty darn good, but that doesn't mean they're going to allow her to give that report between two Ozempic commercials.
Obviously not.
Yeah,
right?
that would be interesting. I'd love to see.
But see, this
God
is
God, does this stuff suck?
Well,
okay,
but
then.
Chief, think about it. This is the basic problem: is that the media doesn't sell subscriptions anymore, right? I mean, who pays for, you know? Well, first off, you don't have a Sun-Times and a Tribune, right? But the subscription revenue was never enough to actually fund the operation of the paper without the ads.
But the ads were, I mean, the Tribune on Sunday, I mean, I can remember, the thing, you could barely lift it.
Yeah, it was huge, and it was full of advertising.
But in the middle, right. There was the, you know, how much of those cars, the independent, you still have them, you can still, like if you get the Orland paper or something, you'll have the Menards 12 or 14 page separate, well, what do you want to call it, not a little newspaper, but a little something in the middle. Tribune used to have probably 30 of those things, Jewel and Kroger.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what do those things used to cost, the separate little thing in the middle you could pull out and actually take it to the store with you? And
I don't know what they charge the ad buyers for it, but I mean, but that, you know, the paper was enormous. It was, you know, 2 inches thick.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, that those guys had that kind of power to drive the editorial column in those days.
Well, no, they didn't, but now they do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And the problem is, as soon as the first guy successfully threatens one of the media outlets and pulls his money and goes to the other guy, okay, as soon as that happens and he succeeds, now if he gets told to pound sand by the other guy, all right, you run our advertising, but no editorial content that trashes our company. As soon as he succeeds in doing that, they all do it.
but if you went out today, and I have this argument constantly with Lou, if you went out today and said, Stocks and Jocks is going to become a major newspaper, ugh, what a lot of work that would be. Here's the deal. If we can sell a million newspapers a day for 50 cents a throw or a buck a throw and have some advertising in there, we can hire, you know, 15 Mike Roycos or John Casses, and we're going to have people out on the street covering these murders and this stuff. We're going to have
right. Some
people are going to say, why should I pay you guys for news? I got all this other stuff I can listen to. Okay.
Well, that's exactly the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. So there is
and
no...
So, well, that's what I'm saying, though, Chief, is that once you had that kind of a shift happen, and then on top of that, once the first guy gets the extortion to work, okay, and he succeeds, everybody else does it because nobody wants to be the one who gets criticized and slammed, okay, in the media. And so as a result, you've shifted the business model, and the only way you could combat it is to have a subscription-based model where you can tell the guy to go piss up a rope. All right. The problem with that is there's 50 other people out there that don't charge the consumer anything.
Well, but they're not. They're just taking stuff from other people. I mean,
I get that, Chief. But here's the thing: why would I pay you, you know, 50 cents a throw or a dollar a throw for the paper, when I can sit on Facebook and pay zero? Or,
yeah,
or
well, maybe,
you know,
but you're not going to get the same.
Well
somebody will steal it or whatever. Yeah, but my point is, you know, people are bitching about it, but they're also not willing to pay for it. So I mean, duh.
Well, okay. But again, we've shifted this. And there's no enforcement of the fact that this kind of a quid pro quo. Now, look, if we had a government in a legal system that actually paid attention to the law,
we're so far beyond it. We have a generation that doesn't.
That's obviously not happening. But
no.
If we did, then if you wanted to be a so-called media outlet that did this, you'd have to label everything as paid opinion pieces. And if that was the case, then yeah, there'd be a market for somebody to come in and say, oh, by the way, we don't do that, okay? And be able to defend it. The problem is you're never going to get that truth in labeling. It's the same thing that's happened. It's the same thing that's happened with food, though, Chief. You take a look at what you've got in a box of Fruit Loops over in Germany versus what you have in a box of Fruit Loops here in the United States. The seed oils and the other garbage that's in the that's in there that's supposedly generally recognized as safe, in those countries, you can't use those things because you have to black box label your stuff.
Well, I mean, but the ignorance of the law, I guess it comes down to the question of when you have is the government just a reflection of us? You walk down the street and you drive around here, nobody feels that any of these laws are for them. There's no enforcement of anything. Now, the question is, now when the government doesn't enforce anything, do you think anybody, what would happen if you and I actually became mayor of the city of Chicago, co-mayors, and said, I'm going to give everybody driving, Ricky, you can pile on this if you want, I'm going to give everybody driving, I'm going to give you 60 days. And you can go to any one of these locations, and I'll let you know if your windows are tinted too dark, and we'll give you 60 days to fix them. By the way, if you don't fix them, we're going to pull you over, and we're going to have two squads, and you're going to get out of the car because we're not approaching the thing.
Right.
It's too dangerous.
It's a felony stop.
Yeah, you're going to put your hands on the trunk, and we're by the way, we're going to search the car. The uproar you would get, nobody wants that. And by the way, if you're over 100 miles an hour on the Ryan, we're impounding the car. Right. So you can't drive until your court date, and maybe you can get your car back. Nobody wants that. Yet anybody who would announce the brains driving along with his family at 70 when it's 55 and somebody blows by him while he's parked realizes that he's in serious danger because of what this guy's doing, but we don't care. Those people don't have a voice.
You have a couple of apartment buildings out in Aurora, Colorado that have been taken over by a Venezuelan gang. Alright, this has now managed to hit the news. Now, I mean, we're talking about guys openly slinging guns, extorting money from the other people that live there. Now, excuse me.
Sounds like a Brittany Green.
Yes, it does. Or it sounds like something out of Venezuela, right? Or Mexican drug lords. In the United States, here in the U.S., where in the blankety blank are the cops? Oh, we don't have enough firepower for that? Well, then you go get some more. All right.
Well, you don't want to be the person that calls them.
Well, yeah, because you're the snitch. Oh, boy, right? But you know what? When this manages to end up in the media, okay, and it is, then you know nobody needs to call them. It's right there.
Oh, yeah.
Where is the response to this? Now, we're not talking about somebody having to snitch them out. It's being publicly reported. 5 seconds after that happens, people say, well, you know, we don't need cops with MRAPs. Well, sometimes we do.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
All right, Carl, what do you got? What do you got? We got a dash. What do you got going this weekend? Anything good?
No, actually, my daughter is taking off over to Nashville with her boyfriend to go see a concert, so I'm a dog sitter, and I'm going to get some running in and probably tip back some brewskis, but that's about it.
Well, I have a friend in Ogden.
I will grill steaks, though, because, you know, I don't care if they're expensive. I'm going to go buy them and grill them anyway.
I might have a couple of pictures for you, and not the kind you're thinking about. Next week, we might, if I can figure out how to work my phone. There's a gentleman in Ogden Dunes, the nicest. He was a foreman on the original, when they put the big waste disposal place out in Stickney. He was a foreman when they built that place.
Oh.
Really accomplished guy. He's 90-ish. Loves old cars. So I promised him last time, I said, you know, if you're feeling well, I'll take your ass down to we'll go spend a couple hours at the Auburn-Duesenberg Cord Museum. If you've ever been there, it's worth a trip. And if he's feeling good on Sunday, I'm going to plop his butt in a truck and off we're going to go. And
cool.
You know what? It'll be an amazing ride because the guy has an amazing amount of history you can talk about. But if you've never been there, you and I would spend a whole day reading all the stuff on the walls about the auto industry. The auto industry really pretty much started in Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, there were like 27 manufacturers in Indiana. The air stuff started in Ohio. I mean, the Midwest was but it is, those cars, talk about works of art. I mean, you look at them and you go, people bought these things and actually drove them around the streets? Good Lord. I mean, anyway, if he's feeling good enough, I'm going to go do that. So it'll be a good deed, and it'll be a lot of fun. And I'll try, and if I get a couple pictures, I'll throw them up on the site or whatever. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 123. You have a nice weekend. Ricky, you as well. Everybody have a nice weekend. Talk to you on Tuesday.
That's all, folks.